You are listening to The Kevin Smith Show. On this program are the responsibility of those who make them. They do not necessarily represent the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or any of its affiliates.
And welcome to the show, ladies and gentlemen, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous planet called Earth. Thanks for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. And those of you joining us for the very, very first time tonight, welcome aboard. We're glad to have you, and I hope you make a habit out of it. Great habit to get into. Lots of folks around this world have that habit, the Kevin Smith Show habit. And, I mean, if you just got to be addicted to something, well, that's a good addiction to have. This week, we've talked about a lot of different things this week, but we've sort of focused in on the Phoenix Lights. And it's appropriate for us to do that because, first of all, it is a significant and rather spectacular UFO event that took place 10 years ago. Secondly, we are just past now the 10th anniversary of the Phoenix Lights. And thirdly, the former governor of the state of Arizona, who made an international display of ridicule of the Phoenix Lights 10 years ago, has now come out publicly stating that, in fact, he did see the gigantic craft himself. And that it was not flares, it was a craft in the air, and it was not flares. Now, we still don't know the whole story behind why he did what he did, but, and really we don't know why now after all these years, after 10 years, we really don't know why he has decided to go public with his admission that he was lying back then. But he has, and so, you know, we've sort of focused on that this week, and we're going to focus on it some more tonight. People have a lot of different attitudes about Mr. Fife Symington, former governor of the state of Arizona, relative to his performance on the issue of the Phoenix Lights. I guess you can tell, I can't really hide it in my voice, I am way beyond disimpressed with Mr. Symington's performance. I at the same time think you sort of have to give people room to try and correct mistakes they've made if they can. And so I'm trying, I really am. However, I think we should keep in mind that as he attempts to correct that mistake back then, that does not take away all of the damage that he did to people's lives and reputations. And he did quite a bit of damage to certain people's lives, reputations, and careers. And actually, I'm glad that he has made a turnaround and is saying what he says now, but at the same time, I think he owes people a lot of money. I mean, if we just get down to what I really think, I think he owes a lot of people a lot of money. He damaged them financially by hurting their careers and reputations, and I think he should pay. But we're going to talk with William Warrick IV tonight, and he's been investigating all of this for 10 years. We'll see what he's got to say about it on the other side of this break. Alien Seeker News has blasted off and is providing a new and important resource for everyone interested in UFOs, aliens, alien abductions, Bigfoot, Chupacabra, and more. Featuring five of the top UFO radio talk shows, lots of information and articles in free forums, Alien Seeker News has launched on its journey to greatness. Go to AlienSeekerNews.com, register for the free forums, and get the classic Flying Saucers Are Real by Major Donald Kehoe as a free ebook. Join today.
Click away from a better way to rent movies. Blockbuster Total Access. Movies through the mail plus movies through the store. One low price. Get a free trial from Blockbuster Store or Blockbuster.com.
You sure you know what you're doing?
Yeah. Where's Ralph? Come here, Ralph. Okay, Ralph. I want you to mount the flat screen on this wall, and then I want you to put the speakers here and here and hook it up to our computer so we can play slideshows and music. Ready, Ralph? Install.
For home theater help, you don't need a dog. You need Fire Dog. Home theater installation, PC service, wireless, and more. Fire Dog, your digital home companion. At Circuit City.
We are back, and as I said, my guest this evening is William Warrick IV. He has been researching the Phoenix Lights and another incident that took place at the same time called the Norfolk Incident for the past 10 years, and he's got some pretty interesting things to say about both incidents. And maybe they are, in fact, connected. William, welcome to the Kevin Smith Show.
I'm glad you're doing better, Kevin.
Well, thank you. I am doing better as far as the stroke, but we continually get this stuff blowing in here from California, and the pollen and stuff, and it gets to my sinuses. So the stroke, hey, I'm doing okay. The sinuses, well, it's tough tonight.
I hear you. Well, thanks for having me on the show. I can't wait to share some of the things that we've discovered about the Norfolk incident and the Phoenix incidents and how they might be related.
Well, let me say this. I spent a lot of time over at your website taking a look at the material and also taking a look at the material that you sent me in the email.
Mm-hmm.
And I was pretty interested because there are certain events that took place. I knew about those events, but had not connected the dots.
Yep.
And so it was pretty interesting. The story of the Phoenix Lights, of course, I'm in Phoenix, in the Phoenix area. It's a big story here. And especially since we've just had another sighting. It is a big story. And I think it's one that sort of overshadowed other things that were happening that we really should have paid attention to. Because it's bigger, apparently, than we thought. And in fact, it involved Virginia. It involved Florida. It involved Phoenix, Arizona, and maybe some other places as well. So why don't we just back up and let you begin to tell us how all of this sort of happened, the timeline, and what's involved.
Wow, let's take a trip down memory lane, huh?
Yeah.
Well, if a lot of your listeners might recall, towards the late 1996 period, the announcements that were made by NASA and Al Gore and various other officials that were sort of kind of hinted, if you go back and look at the actual reports, it seemed as though they were trying to hint that perhaps the story might break, that there might be some kind of alien artifact, or the Martian meteorite that was found up in was it the North Pole or the South Pole in Antarctica. So there were a number of stories that it seemed were pushing the idea, and of course that we had Hyakutake, the comet that came, I believe, in late 95, 96, and then of course we had Comet Hale-Bopp, which followed shortly thereafter. So certainly that winter of 96 leading into the spring of 97, there was a lot of talk within even, the respected so-called NASA communities that some story might break about aliens or extraterrestrial or life on Mars or any of that stuff.
Yeah.
Which is currently thought to be, of course, poo-pooed, and it's impossible, and the speed of light is too much, and this, that, and the other thing. But it really assumes that we know everything about the universe and everything about the five laws of physics, and we don't.
Mm-hmm. Well, in fact, there may be 30 laws of physics.
Who knows? Mm-hmm. We'll never know. I mean, it's just if you stack it into cosmology, astrology, astronomy, and various other, high sciences, you begin to realize that there's only so much that we're really ever going to know.
Mm-hmm.
We've got the dark matter situation. We have no idea what's going on with that. 75% of the universe is made up of dark matter, but we don't know what it is.
Yeah, it's made up of our ignorance.
Filled to the brim. Yes, it is.
Yeah.
And so you there's so much emphasis placed on what can we prove. Well, you know what? We can't prove much. If I asked you, do you love your daughter? And you say, yeah. I say, prove it. Well, how do you prove that? You say you believe in UFOs or you saw a UFO, but you don't have a picture. Well, prove it. Well, if you don't have a picture, how do you prove it?
Even when you have a picture, people say that's not
absolutely
true. You know something?
Absolutely.
I've said this before, William, and let me try it out on you. You can't even prove you exist.
Yeah.
What are you going to present? If I'm not prepared to accept testimony of other people, then you cannot prove you exist. You can bring your mother into the courtroom, and I could say, well, she says...
Vanilla Sky Syndrome.
Yeah, and then you hand us the birth certificate.
Yeah.
And I say it's a document. Anybody can forge a document. You hand me your driver's license, your Social Security card. Hey, people can go out and buy documents today. This proves nothing. You can't prove you exist.
I was a search and recruiter for a little while. Recruited technical people, high-end technical people from jobs, and convince them to leave their company and go to another company because it's a better life and this, that, and the other thing. And I didn't like it that much, but I was pretty good at it. And, you learn very quickly that people are only going to tell you what they want you to know.
Mm-hmm.
Their resume isn't really worth the paper that they're written on for most of the time. And, yeah, it's very true. And that's why I think it's important to focus on the witnesses, the actual eyewitnesses. That's part of the reason why I decided to, do this conference in Glendale for the Phoenix Witnesses, because I know that the true story of what has happened in Phoenix has not gotten out. We haven't even touched the surface of it in any form that would, inform the rest of the world as to really what happened.
Well, let's talk about what happened in Norfolk.
Sure.
Because it actually happened just before the Phoenix.
Ah, very good. Yes, it happened the day before, March 12, 1997, at 9:08 Eastern Time in Norfolk, Virginia. And that, do you want me to get into the big story or just
yeah.
the short story?
Yeah.
Well, basically, I went out, so I was working for Roto-Rooter at the time. I was a plumber, working my way through my senior year in college at ODU. And I was over a friend's house watching actually some of the March Madness games ODU was in the finals that year. And his dad had a drain that had a problem with it. Long story short, I went out to my truck to get a business card for him to give to his dad, who had a pool right next door to his apartment. And he owned both properties. His father owned both properties. On the way back in, I caught something out of the corner of my eye. I looked up to my right, and I saw an object pass in front of the three stars of Orion's Belt. Blink each one out individually. And the particular area that we were at was what's called a TCA, Terminal Control Airspace. It was restricted TCA. We were basically surrounded by military bases. It was literally like a little rectangular section of residential houses surrounded by some of the largest and most important military installations in the world. So when I saw the boomerang pass in front of the three stars of Orion's Belt, it didn't have any lights on,
mm-hmm.
anti-collision lights.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that something was either wrong or something was weird or whatever. And so I stopped and I...
And when you say something was wrong, the thought was, hey, maybe this is an aircraft that's having problems?
No, actually my first thought, because I've never seen an airplane that flies at night without its anti-collision lights on. It's against the law. You can really have your license pulled for that.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly not in restricted terminal control airspace. You know, you can't even fly into that airspace without clearance,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to other areas in the country where you can just fly wherever you want and you don't have to really check in, other than filing a flight plan. So from my own Civil Air Patrol background, I mean, you have to have anti-collision lights on. So right away I knew that either something was wrong, but my first thought was that it was actually a hang glider.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Because from below it sort of had the same boomerang configuration as a hang glider. And I did some hang gliding out at North Carolina at Kill Devil Hills. They have a training camp up there. So, I was very familiar with, flight and everything. I mean, I knew. So I was like, hey, cool. This is the first thought that came into my head. Do you remember the movie Safe from New York?
Yes. I do.
Where at the beginning, where Snake Plissken's coming in on the hang. I mean, I was like 12 years old when it came out, so.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I thought it was. I thought it was going to be like a mock takedown of Naval Air Station, because the runway was, a couple thousand yards away. So
okay.
I stopped to watch it, and all of a sudden it dropped. It just dropped in altitude and it rotated on its axis.
Mm-hmm.
You ever seen a maple leaf? Not a maple leaf, but a seed pod for a maple tree fall?
Sure.
And they spin around on the central axis?
Right.
Yeah, that's what it did. Just like that.
How far did it drop, William?
I estimate about 6,000 feet in about, 2 seconds, 3 seconds maybe, the most.
Kind of fast.
Anything that moved that fast would have had to have broken the sound barrier.
Right.
Thing.
Uh-huh.
And just so the listeners don't know, if you know anything about me, I mean, when I was a kid, all I ever wanted to do was to become a Navy pilot when Top Gun came out,
mm-hmm.
And I hung around airports. I was an airport kid. I wanted to become, like I said, a Navy pilot. So I was very familiar with flight characteristics, lift, weight, drag, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I knew what conventional aircraft looked like.
Mm-hmm.
Around them all the time. It's my job as a spotter in the Civil Air Patrol to be able to identify aircraft from the back of a, C-152, a 152, and help the pilots and everyone else to coordinate the location with ground crews to find that downed aircraft.
Mm-hmm.
So when it dropped that fast, and I lost it actually, it dropped so fast that I lost it, and it had dropped sort of behind a house Teddy's father's house, and some trees, and to about treetop level, and slowly crept out from it at like maybe 20, 30 miles an hour at the most, maybe even less than that. It's hard to judge how fast something that size is moving when it's that size.
In fact, on your website, there's an artist reconstruction of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very interesting, and very a huge craft.
At the time, at the initial time, I estimated 600 to 800 feet,
mm-hmm.
because I thought it was a little further away from me over some streetlights on Rogers Avenue. But when I went back and took pictures later on, a couple years later, and did it again a couple more years later, I realized that it was actually a lot closer than I thought it was in order to have had the streetlights shine off it the way that they did. So when I kind of recalculated that in my head, you know, and compared it to what my memory was, what it looked like, and the size and how the light was shining off and all that stuff, then I kind of recalculated the size to be probably between 400 and 600 feet as opposed to 600 to 800 feet. But that's still just mind-boggling.
It's big.
Why, yeah. By the way? Why?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just to give you some idea of its general overall shape, if you took a black piece of iron, all right, a rectangular piece of iron, you made it 400 feet to 600 feet wide, let's just say 500 feet wide, okay, which is two of the brand new Airbuses wingtip to wingtip.
Okay, yeah.
And made it 32 to 35 feet tall, like build houses right now these days. I've had a design architectural firm for a while, so I'm really good with sizes like that, and it was close enough to the houses that I could compare it in my mind. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, if you made it about 32 to 35 feet tall, and front to back, 25 feet, I'm sorry, the other way around, I'm sorry, it was 35 feet front to back at about 25 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me.
So it's about two and a half stories tall?
Yeah, roughly.
Uh-huh. And it's...
35 feet front to back.
35 feet front to back. So a 3.5-4-story building front to back. That's a big aircraft.
Yeah.
And what color was it?
Well, when I first saw it, it was just a dark spot in the sky that was moving. When it blinked in front of Orion stars. When it was closest to me, perpendicular to me, about 150 feet away, and I did check this with a laser. I have lasers that we use that are accurate to a quarter of an inch that I can measure stuff as long as I got a good target to bounce it off. And the distance from me to the top of the streetlight was like, I think it was 125, 128. I was getting a little bit of reflection. But so it couldn't have been more than 5 or 10 feet above that. So it's like 130, 140 feet away from me.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, when there were their amber-colored streetlights, the high-pressure sodium streetlights, and they have an amber color to them, as opposed to high-intensity discharge of the halogen one, the other one, which are more white. So it could have tinted the light, you know, could have tinted the reflection a little bit.
Okay, right. So you have this huge craft, and this was the night before.
Right.
And what did you do about it?
As soon as the signing took place, I stood there for about 15 minutes. I was in shock. I really couldn't move. It was just like, I can't explain it. I stood there for 15 minutes on this porch, and I turned around, came inside. I said, you know, they're going to believe what I saw. And then I went back outside after about 10 minutes, and I got on my CB radio and, you know, tried to contact some of the other guys that might have been working that night to ask them if they saw anything.
And did they?
I only talked to one guy, but he wasn't even in Norfolk, so. But that led to me getting fired 2 days later. Just coming out and saying that.
And they told you that's why they fired you, huh?
His exact words, honest to God, were, come on, Billy, or whatever, but yeah, that's why I got fired. There's no other reason to fire me. I've been working for over a year.
Yeah, you know, my advice to people whose income is negatively impacted by idiots, even over this issue, is to sue them.
Yeah, but you got to understand, I was 26 years old in college. I had nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing. I had nothing.
Well, you know, I understand that. The world is pretty much run by idiots.
Most of the people that I found that are in positions of power really don't deserve them. That's true.
Yeah. And anytime one of them they try to act as if they are intellectual when in fact, you know, they only have two brain cells, and one of them is already on Mapops. And then when they try to roll over on somebody and make life difficult on them, I believe in biting back. All the science is on your side.
Well, you know, that's interesting that you bring that up, because that was one of the main points that I wanted to get across in the conference, was the fact that for far too long, I mean, this has been on for 60 years, people have been seeing stuff, okay? Mm-hmm. An alien, is a human, I don't really care, all right? I have a civil right and the freedom granted to me in the Constitution of the United States and the Bill of Rights and the Declaration of Independence to talk about anything that I want to talk about, as long as it's not sedition and as long as it doesn't cause harm to other people.
Mm-hmm. And that's right.
No one should get fired for that.
The head of the company should. The head of the company who makes life miserable
on
people deserves to be in the soup line. And you can put him there.
You know, if it was any other issue, if they fired you because you were black, if you were too old, if you were handicapped, if you had three eyeballs and green skin, you could sue them for that.
Mm-hmm.
But there is no specific law that says that if they fire you on or off the books, with or without a reason, for making a UFO report, there's no specific law that protects people from the kind of, it's called social repercussions. No, it's not social repercussions. It wasn't a social thing that hurt me. It was not being able to make my rent.
Let me tell you, if you say that it is, in fact, part of your political belief or part of your religious belief, you got them. You own them. We'll talk about that when we come back. We have to take a break, folks, and when we come back from this break, we'll continue talking with our guest this evening, William Warrick, and we're talking about the Norfolk incident and the Phoenix Lights incident and how perhaps they are related.
Great everywhere, but that doesn't come back to bite me. Hello?
There's been a mistake. You took home a poisonous cottonmouth.
I missed that last part. What?
It could bite you.
I lost you.
Hello?
Besides, I'm playing with my snake.
Wish you were on a more reliable wireless network. Verizon Wireless has the fewest drop calls of any national carrier.
Good.
Come here, daddy, kid. Yeah.
Verizon Wireless, we never stop working for you.
You're just a mouse click away from a better way to rent movies. Blockbuster Total Access. Movies through the mail, plus movies through the store. One low price. Get a free trial through Blockbuster Store or Blockbuster.com.
It has the clean, elegant feel of European design, with a sculpted exterior of high-grade stainless steel. The very latest in programmable technology at your fingertips. There's even room for 12. But perhaps what is most extraordinary about this stylish machine is that it's free just for trying 4 boxes of Gevalia Cafe, Europe's most delectable coffee, for only $19.95. We'll even include a stainless steel travel mug. Order today and choose 4 from our exquisite collection of Gevalia coffees and teas. We'll deliver your freshly sealed selections direct to your doorstep along this sleek coffee maker and travel mug. A retail value of $115. Yours free for trying Gevalia with no further obligation. Order yours today. Gevalia Cafe. Always a pleasure.
You sure you know what you're doing?
Yeah. Where's Ralph? Come here, Ralph.
Okay, Ralph. I want you to mount the flat screen on this wall, and then I want you to put the speakers here and here, and hook it up to our computer so we can play slideshows and music. Ready, Ralph? Install.
For home theater help, you don't need a dog. You need Fire Dog. Home theater installation, PC service, wireless, and more. Fire Dog, your digital home companion. At Circuit City.
We are back, and if you've just now tuned in, let me tell you that my guest this evening is William Warrick, and he is a longtime researcher of the Norfolk incident and the Phoenix Light incident. And when we cut away, we were talking about the fact that these two incidents, in fact, may be all part of one big incident. William, after the Norfolk sighting, after you saw this big UFO in Norfolk, Virginia, I believe it was either that night or the next night, there was something that happened to President Clinton.
Yeah. I found out about the day that I got fired. I believe that was Friday, March 14th. My boss and the assistant manager showed up at my doorstep to reclaim my truck that I was leasing from them with all of my tools. And as soon as I walked in the screen door and they called the sheriff to get the truck, I told them to go screw themselves and blah, 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 blah. Made a big scene about it because I was furious. I was absolutely furious, if you can imagine it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all I did was get on the radio and ask one of my other guys that was working, you know, if they had seen anything. I told them, I said, you're never going to believe this. I just saw an 800-foot white boomerang fly over my head. And of course, he told, you know, the dispatch, you know, and then went through the whole corporate BS thing. And I walked in my door, and on CNN, or whatever channel it was, I think it was CNN, the story had broke about, this was in the morning of March 14th, that Clinton had allegedly injured himself in Hobie Sound, Florida, while he was visiting Greg Norman.
He blew out his knee.
Blew out his knee, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's what they say. There were some people, some of my sources say that that's just a cover story, but you know, it's unconfirmed. There's no way for me to confirm it.
And on the 13th, you had the Phoenix Lights.
Yeah, but you know what? At the time, I didn't know that. I thought I was the only person in the world. I thought the next day, I actually called in sick on the 13th. So I had 3 sick days coming to me. I've been working there for a year, and I had accumulated 3 sick days. So I had used one of them to call in on the 13th. And I didn't have any idea about the Phoenix Lights. I didn't know about the Phoenix Lights until July 4th, 1997, when Sci-Fi Channel did a special on it. So for the longest time, I mean, especially within the first few days, I was a little freaked out.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was like I felt like this huge hand had just swooped down and destroyed my whole life, and I had no idea what was going on. And I thought it was impossible. I'm like, it was impossible. This is the largest military. There were a quarter of a million active duty personnel within a 2 mile radius of the point where I saw this UFO. If a lot of people aren't familiar with the Hampton Roads area, it has the largest collection of military installations anywhere in the world.
All right, now let me ask you something. Where were you raised?
I'm from the South Boston, Marielle McCormick, known to locals as the old Harbor Housing Project in South Boston, Massachusetts.
Okay. Now,
I grew up in the same housing project as Whitey Bulger and you know, all these movies that are being made right now, and all these people, I know all of them.
All right. Were you raised in a fairly religious family?
Roman Catholic, absolutely, yes.
All right. Now, you know, I said before the break that anybody who tries to harm your career, your reputation, and your income, or anyone who does, you absolutely have them by the throat. And especially if you were raised in a religious family. Because you were raised, if you stop and think about it, you were raised to believe in extraterrestrials. God is, by definition, an extraterrestrial. He's not from here.
You know, I've often, you know, that's the conclusion that I've come to as well, is that, especially after this event.
What are angels?
You know, what's any of it?
Okay.
You know, it completely...
They tell you that they're going to fire you because they don't want anybody that believes in extraterrestrials, or usually what they say is it's a real dumbass statement. They say, little green men. I've never heard a serious UFO researcher ever refer to little green men. Only idiots and media, which is sometimes equivalent. And so when they harm you for any of this, It is a violation of your constitutionally protected right to freedom of religion.
Yep. You know, I never thought of it quite in that vein. I mean, I have always sort of looked at it from a civil libertarian standpoint of view. You know, growing up in Boston, I mean, you're steeped in the tradition of rebellion. You know, your whole history. I mean, every street corner. You know, this is the Boston Massacre over here, and this is Dorchester Heights, where Washington, you know, right in the middle of South Boston, you know, you kicked the British out of and turned the tide of the American Revolutionary War. And so, it's in our blood. You know, yeah, you're right. You know, you're absolutely right. If someone out there has had this happen to them, and I was just a plumber, for Christ's sakes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, can you imagine? You know what really started the conference thing? Because this only took place a month and a half ago, and already it's turned into this huge thing. I mean, it's unbelievable how many people wanted this to happen. Because I'll tell you what, it's all volunteer.
Mm-hmm.
No one that's appearing is getting paid a dime,
mm-hmm.
okay? Because I don't have any money.
Okay.
Not enough, you know, to pay people $1,000 or $2,000 or anything, even, you know, nothing. So it's a completely volunteer effort, you know, except for the videographers that we are paying for their time to actually record, you know, so that everyone will have a videotape testimony. Not filtered through, you know, whatever. I mean, it's going to be the raw deal. And anyone in the world is going to be able to see and hear the testimony of the witnesses. Because really, at the end of the day, that's all we really have, is the testimony of the witnesses. And you got to go to the raw data. You know, as an investigative journalist, you know, you got to go to the source.
Scott Peterson is on death row on the basis of far less evidence than there is for the existence and reality of UFOs.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because, well, it's not funny. It's really sad. That was a bad choice of words.
But you mean it's odd.
Well, of course it's not odd. I mean, there's a lot of reasons if you really think about, you know, the whole disclosure of extraterrestrial intelligence is, you know, and of course these cases are used and these arguments are made, you know, they go back to the 1938, you know, War of the Worlds broadcast by Orson Welles on Halloween that freaked everybody out so much. But yeah, of course it's going to freak them out because you portrayed it as a horror show. It was meant to scare the living crap out of people, you know?
Mm-hmm.
The Martians are invading, they're taking over the Earth. Now, if it was a program that was handled in a much, you know, without that sort of terror element to it, you would have had a much different income. Who knows?
Yeah, but human nature is unpredictable.
And we fear what we don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
We fear what we don't understand. And just like Yoda said in Star Wars, you know, fear leads to hatred, hatred leads to anger, and anger leads to suffering. And surely there are a lot of people that suffered. In fact, there was a case in the 50s where another radio station in Ecuador did the same radio broadcast or a similar one. And when the people found out about it, they rioted and they burned down the radio station and killed 15 people.
Mm-hmm.
True story. But a lot of people have never heard this story, but it's a true story. And, you know, so there are some very valid reasons why the governments of the United States and other governments would want to keep this secret, because they were afraid of a change in the power structures, especially religion and stuff like that. And a lot of people don't want that. You know, they like the status quo. But we're at a point right now, I think, in the development of civilization in general, where, 2,000 years ago, the greatest minds in the world were sure that the sun and the planets and the stars revolved around the Earth. Absolutely sure. And if you disputed that, they would put you to death.
Yep.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And fast forward 1,500 years, and some guys stopped to say, well, you know, it took them 15 years to figure out, well, maybe that's not quite right. Maybe, in fact, the stars and we revolve around the sun. And, of course, a lot of people died for that idea. You know, they fought mm-hmm. for an idea, and they died for it. Interesting concept. And I would say the same is true of a lot of UFO researchers today and people who have fought and died to release the information for this particular subject. And most people never heard of these people, and they never will. But you fast forward another couple hundred years, and all of a sudden we go from a solar system consciousness, okay, And we explode that out to a galactic level when we realize that we are actually a solar system traveling around a galaxy. We revolve around a galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
So then our consciousness expanded to a galactic level. Well, today we are at the point where we are going from the galactic level of consciousness, so to speak, to a universal level of consciousness. And each time we had that quantum leap in consciousness, it required people, individuals, willing to lay their life on the line to tell the truth. It all involved the truth. The truth versus mythology versus, religion versus whatever. It was the truth. That's the whole scientific method. And the fact that the sciences that should be looking into this, I mean, this should be the biggest story on the planet. This should be motivating us to go to the next level. And instead, our entire attention is focused on tribal warfare.
Well, and that's a very important point. And here's why I say it's important. It's important for a number of reasons, but the reason I pointed out is that we have people that call into this show all the time, William, and they will say, well, we're ready for it now. We can handle it now. The problem with that is those people, best intentions, but they are assuming the world is exactly like themselves. And the truth is that most of this world is barely above tribalism of 50,000 years ago.
I wouldn't even give it that much credit. I would, because we see the difference between what happened, 5,000 years ago between the Persians and the Babylonians or whatever, the Akkadians, actually, if you go that far, well, Sumerians, actually, if you go that far back, history, I'm a real history buff.
Mm-hmm.
But, is that they didn't have the technological capacity to destroy the Earth. Okay,
mm-hmm.
And they didn't have the knowledge that we have today about the things that they do, and about the impact that they would have. You know what I'm saying? They didn't have that sort of homo. What do they call the new homo? What is it? Homo sapiens sapiens.
Mm-hmm.
That's what anthropologists now call us as humans. We're no longer Homo sapiens. We're Homo sapiens sapiens, thinking humans. Right?
Mm-hmm. Oh well, that's nice. I'm glad to know that we've graduated.
Supposedly thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're thinking a lot, but I mean, the light's on, but nobody's home. The whole issue of UFOs really for me boils down to this, is if we can't come together and talk about something in the open, and the truth, whatever that truth is, about objects in the sky that we can't explain, okay, how are we going to tackle global warming? How are we going to tackle global economies and the third world nations? And I mean, there are just so many problems in our world today. And I look at the UFO enigma as the watershed acid test of the American liberty and liberties that our country was founded on, that got us to this point, and that we fought so many wars supposedly for. I mean, we've got young, families, young. This is just such an emotional thing for me. It gets me so worked up. I get so upset about this. In Iraq, fighting a war. Well, where's the war? Where's the battlefront? Show me where the battlefront is. I see our soldiers driving up and down, Baghdad Avenue, getting blown apart by improvised explosive devices. Who are they fighting? Who's the enemy? Do we even know who the enemy is?
You'll never, ever know, ever again, in the history of mankind, who your enemy is.
Who is the enemy?
You will never know. Your enemy is who wants you dead, but you will never know. They don't wear uniforms now.
Look, my wife works with one of her friends, and her husband just came back from Iraq. Okay, do you know they have to buy their own goddamn flak jackets?
Okay. One warning, and only one, that we cannot allow that on the air, okay? And we will get in lots of trouble for that. We have to take a break, and when we come back from this break, we will continue with William Warwick IV. Phoenix Lights and Norfolk incident connected? Just maybe.
You know what you're doing?
Yeah. Who's Ralph? Come here, Ralph.
Okay, Ralph. I want you to mount the flat screen on this wall, and then I want you to put the speakers here and here and hook it up to our computer so we can play slideshows and music. Ready, Ralph? Install.
For home theater help, you don't need a dog. You need Fire Dog. Home theater installation, PC service, wireless, and more. Fire Dog, your digital home companion. At Circuit City.
We're just a mouse click away from a better way to rent movies. Blockbuster Total Access. Movies through the mail plus movies through the store. One low price. Get a free trial at your Blockbuster store or Blockbuster.com.
Get it all. Become a member at KevinSmithShow.com.
Great everywhere, but that doesn't come back to bite me.
Hello?
There's been a mistake. You took home a poisonous cottonmouth.
I missed that last part. What?
It could bite you.
I lost you.
Hello?
Besides, I'm playing with my snake.
Wish you were on a more reliable wireless network. Verizon Wireless has the fewest drop calls of any national carrier.
Good.
Come give Daddy kiss. Yeah.
Verizon Wireless, we never stop working for you.
And we are back. My guest this evening, William Warrick. He has been researching the Phoenix Lights and the Norfolk incident for the past 10 years and has found some pretty amazing connections. William, one of the connections or one of the facts that you uncovered is that there were four military personnel who lost their lives related to this Phoenix Lights Norfolk incident.
Yes, possibly. Troubleshooter 615 is a special operations HH-60 Navy helicopter that crashed at 11:19 p.m. on the evening of March 13, 1997. Four brave men died in that crash, and it's never been explained. The own military's report says it's a mystery, quote unquote. The story, you know, oddly enough, did not print. There was not one iota of information printed about the story, the news media or otherwise. I would have known about it because I was looking for stuff like that until December of 1997. Where they came out with the report, very short, you know, maybe a page and a half, printed in the Virginia Pilot, and that was it. And had I not seen it that particular day, we wouldn't even be talking about it right now. No one would know.
How would that be connected?
Well, you have to look at the time. There are a number of UFO sightings that occurred, actually, in Virginia Beach, I found later, that occurred leading up to and including, you know, March 12th. But if you look at the time, 11:19 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on March 13th, and we can look at the Clinton injury that we talked about, mm-hmm. which supposedly took place at between 1 or 2:30 a.m. on March 14th.
Okay.
Well, Greg Norman, in an interview with Jay Leno on The Tonight Show, this comes from Peter Davenport of New Fork, told me just March 13th, right before going on the Coast to Coast show, that in fact Greg Norman says that the injury occurred at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Now, if you correlate 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to Arizona time, it is at the exact peak of the UFO boomerang sightings in Phoenix. Not the later 10 p.m. fire drop, okay, which everyone did the whole media documentaries, et cetera, they all focus on the 10 p.m. fire drop. I'm talking about the earlier sightings where two-thirds of all the sightings that were reported about UFOs occurred,
mm-hmm.
which were the earlier boomerang sightings. Actually, this is live, right, Kevin?
Yes.
Anyone that wants to turn CNN on right now, they're doing the Fife Symington thing. They're doing an interview with Fife Symington about his Phoenix Light sighting as we speak. It's on CNN Channel 8 on Eastern.
Well, they're already 2 days behind us, so that's so, normal.
Yeah. I got just, what was I talking about before?
Well, we were talking about
The connection between, right, the troubleshooter 605, I apologize. Mm-hmm. So if you correlate all those times, what that means is that 10 minutes after troubleshooter 615 crashed into the Atlantic Ocean, 80 miles off the coast of Norfolk, 11 minutes after that, President Clinton allegedly hurts his knee. And simultaneously with those two events, you have the peak of the UFO sighting in Arizona. Now, here's where it gets really interesting with Fife Symington's revelation, okay?
Mm-hmm.
He says he saw the boomerang-shaped UFO or triangular-shaped UFO at 8:25 p.m., okay?
Mm-hmm.
So all of these three events, seemingly unconnected events, all happened within 60 minutes of each other.
Well, now, depending on what time, March. See, here's the problem. All of the rest of the world has this thing called daylight savings time.
Uh-huh.
Now, out here in Arizona, we don't change our time, and by God, we don't change our mind. Okay, I mean, it is what it is, you know.
Uh-huh.
Now, I'm not sure back then what were the dates that they changed to daylight savings time.
Uh-huh.
Because it would have been either 2 or 3 hours difference.
If it was 2 hours different, then you'd be looking at the 9:30 sightings in Norfolk. I mean, not Norfolk, in Phoenix. You know, the sightings that we call the Phoenix Lights, okay, really started, you know, from, you know, the counts from Newfork, the reports that have been made to him. It's at about, was it 6:55 p.m. in Nevada, or in southeast Nevada. And you can follow the reports and the times of the reports and the locations of the reports are coming from as the object goes from that corner of Nevada down from the northwest of Phoenix, northwest of Phoenix, coming down towards Phoenix. So you, you know, you can correlate all. There's enough reports where you can just you can draw a line, you know. So,
well, if Fife Symington saw them, he would have seen them in Phoenix. And so if he saw it at, he's saying...
8:25 p.m. is what I've been told.
Mm-hmm.
On March 13th.
Yeah, there's a possibility. We would have to check the calendar back then and see at what time we switched or at what time everyone else switched to daylight savings time. Because if you were already on daylight savings time, there's a three-hour difference between Phoenix and the East Coast.
If that's true, then that means that at 11:19 p.m., and again, you know, the Fife Symington story just broke. I heard about it a couple of weeks ago, but I was sworn to secrecy by the person that told me about it because they were afraid that, you know, something might happen. And they didn't want to break the story. And we were also, you know, I personally, as an investigative journalist, you get information all the time, but until you can verify it, you really kind of have to sit on it because, you know, you don't know if you're being set up for a fall.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I was optimistic about it, but skeptical. And when March 13th rolled around, nothing happened. Because this story was supposed to break March 13th, but Leslie Kane from freedomofinfo.org, who was the other investigative journalist who broke this story with James Fox of Out of the Blue, the documentary producer and director of Out of the Blue, they couldn't, there was no major news outlet that would take it.
I don't blame them. If Fife Symington had made fools out of my reporters back in 1997, as he did, Fife could be, you know, he could have discovered the entrance to hell, and I would not cover it.
A lot of people, me too, and I was too, believe me, I was. I mean, I lived in Norfolk, and I saw the boomerang, and I only have one other guy come forward and say that he saw it too. I didn't have 800 people talking about it. The governor of California wasn't talking about it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And when I saw the documentary on Sci-Fi Channel on July 4th, 1997 with Jonathan Frakes, and they brought out, you know, the whole uniform, you know, the costume thing. I mean, I was so angry. And I know that a lot of other witnesses had been furious about that. And so I don't blame you. But at the same time, though, you know, we really have to take a step back and say, okay, you know, let's try not to judge a guy without walking in his shoes. We don't
On the other hand, if I were the news agencies, I wouldn't cover it.
Oh, of course not. Of course not. In that case, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely right. Yeah.
I would say this guy's got nothing relevant to say.
And you can't blame them for that. But still, historically, if you look at this historically, though, he is the highest publicly elected official, other than Jimmy Carter, to have ever openly admitted to having seen and making a report of a UFO, especially when there's 800 other people, by Francis Barwood's account, that had seen similar object. That's what's different about this. So this is really historical. And as much as we want to, you know, get down on Fife Symington, you know, I know what I saw. Unless he's lying, and I don't think that he is, then he saw the same thing.
Unfortunately, in his case, there's really no reason to believe that he's telling the truth.
Why would he lie about it now?
Well, you know, I don't know, other than the world over, everyone knows the Phoenix Lights, and virtually no one knows Fife Symington now.
But why would he do that?
Maybe he's got a book coming out. I don't know. I mean, people have all kinds of reasons why, and I'm actually holding myself back here and being as kind as I can be. But, you know, I don't know. I don't know why he would come out now and say it. And I hope he's telling the truth about having actually seen it. But then again, so what? 800 real, genuine people who were brave enough to step forward. They know what they saw back then. And they paid the price. He helped them to have to pay that price. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back, and we'll open the telephone lines, 1-800-289-1092, when we come back.
10, 9. Alien Seeker News has blasted off and is providing a new and important resource for everyone interested in UFOs, aliens, alien abductions, Bigfoot, Chupacabra, and more. Featuring five of the top UFO radio talk shows, lots of information and articles in free forums, Alien Seeker News has launched on its journey to greatness. Go to AlienSeekerNews.com, register for the free forums, and get the classic Flying Saucers Are Real by Major Donald Kehoe as a free ebook. Join today.
It has the clean, elegant feel of European design, with a sculpted exterior of high-grade stainless steel. The very latest in programmable technology at your fingertips. There's even room for 12. But perhaps what is most extraordinary about this stylish machine is that it's free just for trying 4 boxes of Gevalia Cafe, Europe's most delectable coffee, for only $19.95. We'll even include a stainless steel travel mug. Order today and choose 4 from our exquisite collection of Gevalia coffees and teas. We'll deliver your freshly sealed selections direct to your doorstep along this sleek coffee maker and travel mug. A retail value of $115. Yours free for trying Gevalia with no further obligation. Order yours today. Gevalia Cafe. Always a pleasure.
Kevin Smith here. Do you have your Kevin Smith Show t-shirt yet? No? Well, let today be the day you step into the world of galactic fashion. Visit the Kevin Smith Show online store and get yours today.
You sure you know what you're doing?
Yeah. Where's Ralph? Come here, Ralph.
Okay, Ralph. I want you to mount the flat screen on this wall, and then I want you to put the speakers here and here and hook it up to our computer so we can play slideshows and music. Ready, Ralph? Install.
For home theater help, you don't need a dog. You need Fire Dog. Home theater installation, PC service, wireless, and more. Fire Dog, your digital home companion. At Circuit City.
You're just a mouse click away from a better way to rent movies. Blockbuster Total Access. Movies through the mail, plus movies through the store. One low price. Get a free trial through Blockbuster Store or Blockbuster.com.
Hey, how's the coverage with that phone?
Eh, doesn't work that great everywhere, but
better than come back and bite me.
Hello?
There's been a mistake. You took home a poisonous cottonmouth.
I missed that last part. What?
It could bite you.
I lost you.
Hello?
Besides, I'm playing with my snake.
Wish you were on a more reliable wireless network? Verizon Wireless has the fewest drop calls of any national carrier.
Good.
Come give Daddy kiss. Yeah.
Verizon Wireless. We never stop working for you.
Kevin Smith Show at 1-800-289-1092.
And we are back. For those of you who are just now joining us during this this second hour, you're just now coming into the Kevin Smith Show during this second hour of the show. Welcome aboard. We're glad to have you. The telephone lines are open, and we are talking with William Warwick. He is a researcher and investigator into the Phoenix Lights and the Norfolk incident, and he says that he thinks there very possibly is a connection between them, and that's what we've been talking about. William, we've got a caller on the line, so let's go straight to the telephone line. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and where are you calling from?
It's Michelle.
Yes.
Yes.
And Michelle, you're calling from where?
Quebec. Sorry, Kevin.
All right, go ahead.
Okay. Don't you think it's a little bit funny, the timing of all this coming out? More of it now about the Phoenix Lights. I know it's the 10th anniversary and everything, but the idea of the thing is, Chicago's dying now. We don't hear much about it. Maybe it's the idea that one story kills another. Because let's face it, we had some pretty good witnesses over in Chicago in O'Hara at the airport.
Well, I hadn't thought about that, but there may be something to that. What do you think, William?
I can barely hear him. I'm sorry. It's kind of a bad connection. Was he talking about the O'Hara incident?
Yes, he says that now we're not hearing much about it, and maybe having Fife come out with this story now sort of makes the O'Hare go away.
This was the event, okay, as I don't know if I alluded to earlier in the conversation, that got me so angry to organize this conference in Glendale, because in January, mid-January, this story broke in a big way, because the report had actually taken place in November. The event happened in November. And it infuriated me. It absolutely infuriated me as a witness to the Phoenix Lights that a daytime sighting was occurring, and one of the largest airports on Earth. And obviously there had to have been numerous qualified observers. Only one airline mechanic had enough courage to come forward in silhouette, anonymously, on television, to tell the story that we've all heard on the internet and in various places. I felt like I had to do something about it, and that's why we've got this, I organized this conference called Eyewitness 2007. If any of the O'Hare pilots, anyone from O'Hare has seen this, I did this for you. I'm spending $20,000 to get you guys to come out and speak about what you saw, because you have a right to talk about this. I know that you were concerned about losing your job and your career, and I'll tell you right now, I will mortgage my house to hire a lawyer to protect you if something like that should happen. Because this is ridiculous that this is going on in this day and age, in the year 2007, that we can't even talk about things in the sky, that we, you know, just to say we don't know what it is, just to open up a discussion about it, it's ridiculous.
And it's illegal.
It's illegal.
If these pilots suffer, if they come out and talk about it, first of all, they've been told don't talk about it, right?
Absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely.
Now, nobody has a right to tell an American to shut up.
And you know what? And what drives me nuts is, you know what? The unions are supposed to be protecting you. What are your unions doing for you? What are you paying your unions dues for, huh? You trying to tell me there's no unions at O'Hare Airport? Come on, man.
And if they decide that they're going to fire these guys, and they say, if you talk about it, we're going to fire you. If you pilots stick together, you pilots and employees stick together and sue that airline, you will be in control of it next year.
Kevin, that beautiful. This is the story that I wanted to tell. Yes, absolutely.
Michelle, does that answer your question?
Yeah, and there's just one other point there, Kevin, if I may.
Sure, go ahead.
You get one person that sues and wins their case, eh?
Say it again?
I say if you get one person that wins a case over UFOs in court.
Yeah. The House of Cards. Yeah, and that's how close we are to this, people, because you've got Fife Symington, the former governor of Arizona, coming out and talking about this now, regardless of how badly we feel we got, you know, spoofed by him, okay? But we don't know what kind of pressure was put on him at the time, okay? And I'm not saying we should go one way or the other, and I feel, Kevin, I'm with you. I mean, we need to see how this thing transpires, but clearly, if ever there was a time to capitalize on this issue, all right, to bring it to the forefront of national attention, it's now. And the pilots at the O'Hare Airport are the key to this.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's going to take some people saying, "Oh, you're going to fire me? You're talking to me? You're going to fire me?" Okay, let's get it on.
Yeah, man. I'll tell you what, I'm from South Boston, okay? And my father stood up against the toughest, most vicious, all right, mafia man in America. His name was Whitey Bulger. They just made a movie about it. It's called The Departed, all right? My father has five bullets in him right now because of it. He spent 13 years in federal prison, all right? And And I will take a bullet for any one of those guys. And I'll say I will take a bullet for any one of them. You come out, man, and anybody gives you any crap, we're going.
Well, we could, you know, we can win this in court. It's called freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom of association.
Absolutely.
And when Americans quit living as if they were, look, I hear people say this, and I disagree with them. They say that we are becoming a fascist country. I've heard that.
Yeah.
I disagree with that. You become a fascist country if you live as though you're in a fascist country. You live free, you are free.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But it requires people like Galileo Galilei, Socrates. It requires individuals standing up and willing to take whatever comes down the pipeline at them for the truth.
That's
okay?
True.
All right. We don't know what they saw. I guarantee you they don't know what they saw.
But it's okay to say we saw something.
That's it. That's mm-hmm. it. That's it. And you know what? If the government's argument is that these things don't exist, okay, fine. Then what are you worried about? Why can't we have a congressional hearing? Orrin Hatch said in 2004, which Stephen Greer and the X-Conference people want to present, you know, them with documents, that they will never have a hearing on UFOs or ET. Well, wait a minute. If they don't exist, what are you worried about? And who are you to make that decision?
Mm-hmm.
This is the U.S. Congress. This is of the people, by the people, for the people. This isn't of Orrin Hatch and the military-industrial complex.
Well, you see, a lot of these guys have forgotten they don't govern anything.
No.
They are employees. They are the janitors at the corporation. We own it.
That's right. And, you know, from time to time, we just need to clean house. You know, the American people should just, you know, have a vote of no confidence. We should have a vote of no confidence. We should be able to have a vote that says, you know what, I don't like you, and I don't like anyone else, and until we fill that position with someone that we like, we'll just leave it vacant, you know? Because in a lot of cases, it's almost like, you know, we don't want someone to be in a position that's going to hurt us. We'll just wait until we get someone that can help us.
Mm-hmm. Well, the main thing is, and look, here's a crystal clear example. I think it's important that the people that we hire, and that's when we talk about elected people.
Representatives.
Then we're talking about people that we have hired
mm-hmm.
to represent us. I think they should represent us, and a crystal clear example is Frances Barwood.
Oh, God love her. I love her to death. See, you know, I didn't know a lot of these people. I just, you know, really got into the Phoenix investigation in a big way in the past couple of months, you know, because I wanted to know. And there are a few people that I've come across that are as much of a straight shooter and just a brave, brave woman as Frances Barwood. She, you know, she stood up for your rights in Phoenix. You know, regardless of what you may think of her, because you probably never met her personally and had a conversation with her for more than an hour or 2 hours or 3 hours or 4 hours like we have. And, you know, she had the courage to stand up and say, you know what, I'm not going to take no for an answer.
Yeah, she said, my constituents are asking questions, yeah. And we are going to get to the bottom of this.
You know, and she told me, she said, Billy, you know what, if they had just said, okay, we'll look into it, she probably would have just brushed it off and never asked another question about it, but it was the fact that they completely ignored her and you know, dodged every effort that she made to just get even the most cursory information that really ticked her off, and good for her, and it should. Everyone, in, you know, you people in Phoenix should be pissed. Can I say that?
Yes.
Okay, cool. You should be very, very, very angry. You know, if this had happened in South Boston, there'd be riots in the street.
Well, yeah, we know. When you put a little black box that has a cartoon on it, you call out to the bomb squads and... Yeah, we know about Boston.
Yeah, you know, I mean, they tried to integrate busing. I mean, you know, Boston has been at the forefront. I mean, really, and this goes back to the 70s. You know, the first Vietnam protest happened in Southie. You know, so, I mean, so it's in the blood. And the point I'm trying to make is that, you know, Frances Barwood stood up for you guys, and you let her down. The reason why, one of the huge reasons why the UFO situation has not really made any progress in 60 years is because there's no political constituency. There's no card-carrying member of the AARP that's equivalent of the UFO enigma,
mm-hmm.
you know? And it's really a shame because it would be such a simple thing to organize. 70% in the recent Roper poll, 70% of Americans said that they believe the government is withholding information about UFOs and ETs, and the same percentage, roughly, believes that they exist. So, you know, it's only going to be a matter of time before a really smart politician figures out how to make this a campaign issue. Okay, typically it's been the kiss of death, okay? But in reality, if someone's smart enough to figure out how to do it and to inspire the people to get, you know, to get that kind of support, a true grassroots organization and a true grassroots leader, I think it could break it.
Well, they could do it, and they could do it now as never before.
I think this is it.
The reason is because, and I don't know if you caught my comments on about this whole Fife Symington thing on Monday, but it kind of started there. When Fife Symington did what he did,
yeah,
the public, his constituents, people who hired him,
mm-hmm,
instantly flipped his switch off and said, "You are insignificant, silly.
Yeah.
You're just insignificant." And just like that, Fife Symington was a non-entity politically from that day forward. Now, the same thing has happened with the news media. The news media, they're all in an uproar now about the fact that they're losing, newspapers are losing circulation by the boatload,
mm-hmm,
television news losing viewers by the boatload, same with radio news, and people are going to the internet to get their information because on the internet they can get that information from people who don't make fun of them. And so they're, the media, let me tell you, right now, at this moment, 52% of the people listening to radio are listening via the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so internet is already in the majority.
And equalizer. It's the great equalizer.
Well, yes, and what's happening is that it's possible now, if you had a candidate, Howard Dean, regardless of what you think of his politics, proved you can go on the internet and run a campaign, and he did it successfully. Of course, when you get in public, you have to remember that you are in public and don't scream. All right,
yeah.
Let's go to the telephone and see what our caller has to say. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and where are you calling from?
Good evening, Kevin. This is Jerry from Indiana.
Hello, Jerry.
If I may, I just want to take a moment to say I'm glad to have you back, and I'm really glad for what seems to be your miraculous recovery. You have a lot of people pulling for you. That must make you feel very good.
I tell you quite honestly, Jerry, it's humbling. It's really humbling. I had no idea. And I have said many times that I have never seen a miracle. Well, I think this qualifies.
My friend, from the symptoms, you decide. I mean, you describe that. It does seem miraculous, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Very close to the abyss,
mm-hmm,
there. Wanted to ask William is if he saw any connection between the deregulation that took place in the 80s of the communications, television, newspapers, with the ownership of all mass media falling into the hands of just a few corporations. If he sees a debasement there, a connection between the debasement of what passes for news now and what it was at one time between deregulation and pre-deregulation days.
In terms of the restriction or the constriction of information into, you know, just a couple of organizations?
Well, William, with everything, if you'll notice, there's very little way of they spend hours and hours and hours covering the same stories. There's very little difference, for example, between papers. You can read any paper and the front page will be the same everywhere. There's very little way of substantive international news. They seem to spend all their time on stories about Pubes and Adelopes, Lesser Singers, and
It's the same. I think it's the same throughout the whole, you know, sort of industry. We've gone from, you know, mom and pop operations where your local paper was, you know, your source of the information, all the information you ever wanted, to you know, all of the major information that's really, really important being filtered to us through, you know, just a couple of outlets. I mean, you've got Fox News Channel, which is obviously Republican. You've got CNN, which is actually pretty good. And then you've got, you know, maybe some more of your liberal stuff. But it's like, you know, you've got three flavors of ice cream and that's it. You go to the internet and you've got 1,000 flavors of ice cream.
You've got everything's infomercial too for entertainment, for film.
Absolutely, you know, and it's internet. You know, Kevin Smith has really touched on something here, and it's not something that I really thought about, but I think he's right. I think that, you know, the internet is definitely the great equalizer in all civil, I call them civil libertarian fights. I'm sure that's probably not the right phrase to use for it, but it's civil liberty. Anyone that fights for your civil liberties, you know, without. You know, you call it patriotic, whatever. That's what the internet is for. And if we don't use the internet the way that Kevin Smith is doing it with this radio show, and getting this information out, because you're not going to read about this on TV. You're not going to read about this in your local newspaper. They refuse to take the story about Five Symington in the first place. Only one newspaper, Leslie Kane, who broke the story about Five Symington, got so frustrated after 3.5 days of trying to get the major newspapers to do this. That's why it broke on the 17th and not the 13th like it was supposed to, that she... you know, she just went to the local newspaper down the street, the Daily Courier, and broke it through them, and let them break the story. So, yeah, absolutely. This is Kevin. What you're doing with this radio show is you're a hero, in my opinion, because if we, you know, there's only a couple of you guys out there, and if this information doesn't get out through you guys, no one's ever going to hear about it.
The second thing I would ask you, if I may, is does it seem to you that the people that are interested in ufology, since this is the topic of discussion tonight, seem to spend so much time flogging dead horses? For example, the fact that the government withholds information about UFOs and very often issue statements that can only be classified as disinformation. When it seems to anyone who's done the research, it's obvious. But Jimmy Carter, for example, tried to get George Bush to lead information. This is an elected president of the United States.
Right.
Bush told him no.
The DCI said you don't have the clearance.
You're
the president of the United States.
I just simply don't understand. I mean, it, the case is closed. Any lawyer could go into any court in this country and adjudicate that proposition that the government is lying and win hands down.
Yeah.
But people still argue about it. I just don't understand why.
Well, because, you know, because if you go to Orrin Hatch or any senator to hold a hearing, like what Leslie Kane is doing with the Kexburg incident, which has been going on for 3 years, they won't hear the case, although this is changing. This is changing. The work, you need to check out freedomofinfo.org, okay? Leslie Kane and the work that her organization is doing. You don't hear a lot about it. It's not publicized. But she's pushing these cases. She's getting, you know, superior court judges to look at these cases and do something about them.
Well, I wish you well, but I think the only way to get anything done is what you said earlier. That's the political action. That's
Well, she, you know, she's only one person.
Yeah.
You know, if there was 250 people, okay, that could get together. The UFO community, I'm an investigative journalist. I don't really even consider myself a ufologist, okay? Because that's like most of the quote-unquote ufologists that I've met, and I won't name them, okay, but they don't do their research, okay? They don't follow up on the stories. They don't check basic facts, you know? And when an outside investigative reporter that can get sued if the facts are wrong, okay, with libel and slander, and have to get their facts straight, comes across these people and does even the cursory examination, not all of them now, I'm not saying all of them, I'm not making, you know, there's some good guys out there and I've met them, and women, but, you know, by and large, it's just not, you know, there's no integrity there.
Well,
and that's the problem.
I appreciate very much what you've done. I really do.
I appreciate it. Well, you know, I try... If you look at my website, you see that, you know, I give the sources, CNN, MUFON, you know, you got to give your sources. Just don't tell me a story. What's the source? You know, and most of the sources of these stories that I'm telling you, these connections are published stories in large newspapers or CNN. You know, it's common knowledge for a lot of it, most of it, 90% of it. You know, documented plane crashes, et cetera, et cetera. It's not, well, some guy told me the story, you know, this plane blew up and blah, 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 you know? So I appreciate that. I appreciate the fact that people understand that, you know, that this is the real deal. This is real research. It's not, you know, ufology.
I understand, sir. Thank you very much.
Jerry, thank you for the call.
Thank you, Kevin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that is important. I think it's very important that people understand that in order for it to have credibility, it has to be sourced.
Right.
Yeah. Now, yeah. You know, one of the things that really gets me going about the media, it doesn't take much to get me going about the media, I'll tell you. But one of the things it does...
A lack of it.
Oh, man. They will hold your feet to the fire and demand sources when you say that there was a UFO. We'll just use this as an example, that there was a UFO reported above O'Hare Airport. Okay, well, what are your sources for that? They're going to hold your feet to the fire.
You know what, but I have the same duty and obligation that they do to protect their sources as they
well,
do.
They don't hold themselves to the same standard when they're debunking.
No, absolutely not. Of course not. I mean, I have information about stuff that I know that if I were to release it, that someone could get killed, literally. And, you know, that's a very serious position to be in. It's not one that I particularly like. But it's part and parcel with what I'm investigating. And, you know, if a UFO, if so, I'll give you, let's give you a hypothetical situation, okay,
right.
About this, all right? Let's say that someone comes to me with a piece of information. Let's say he's the pilot of one of the planes at O'Hare, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And he says, look, Bill, I got 42,000 hours, I got four kids, I got a $500,000 house. You know, if my company even gets wind that I gave you this information, I will lose everything. They will fire me on the spot. And I'll say, well, you know, we could take them to court. And I'll say, you know what, though? I just don't need that in my life right now. I want to retire. I'm ready to get out. Blah, 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 blah. And then he goes on and tells me what he saw and what he experienced and everything else. And he gets his friends on the telephone, and they tell me the same story, and or I meet them, whatever. I verify it. You know what I mean? I meet these people. They're not just, you know,
sure.
Nebulous.
Mm-hmm.
People on an anonymous email, right?
Yeah.
And then someone interviews me and I can tell them information about his son, and he says, well, who's your source? I said, well, I can't tell you that. Now, does that mean that I'm lying?
No, it means you're doing what newspapers do every day in this country.
Right. Well, we're in a bird stealing. It's the same thing. Now, if it was, you know, the president of the United States, you know, having an affair with Monica Lewinsky under the table at the White House, it's a different story. You can cover your source on that. But if it has anything to do with UFOs, you know, it's scoffed at and ignored. And
oh, yeah, they play by different rules, and the First Amendment does not apply. We have to take a break, and when we come back, we'll continue with William Warrick. The telephone number, 1-800-289-1092. Toll free throughout North America. Don't go away.
Get it all. Become a member at kevinsmithshow.com.
Great everywhere, but
that doesn't come back and bite me.
Hello?
There's been a mistake. You took home a poisonous cottonmouth.
I missed that last part. What?
It could bite you.
I lost you.
Hello?
Besides, I'm playing with my snake.
Wish you were on a more reliable wireless network. Verizon Wireless has the fewest drop calls of any national carrier.
Good.
Come here, Daddy Kid. Yeah.
Verizon Wireless, we never stop working for you.
You're just a mouse click away from a better way to rent movies. Blockbuster Total Access. Movies through the mail plus movies through the store. One low price. Get a free trial through Blockbuster Store or Blockbuster.com.
You sure you know what you're doing?
Yeah. Where's Ralph? Come here, Ralph.
Okay, Ralph. I want you to mount the flat screen on this wall, and then I want you to put the speakers here and here, and hook it up to our computer so we can play slideshows and music. Ready, Ralph? Install.
For home theater help, you don't need a dog. You need Fire Dog. Home theater installation, PC service, wireless, and more. Fire Dog, your digital home companion. At Circuit City.
Call Kevin Smith at 1-800-289-1092.
And we are back. We are not actually on final approach, but we don't have a great deal of time left. We only have about a half an hour left. And so if you have a question or a comment that you would like to address to William Warrick, I recommend that you give us a call. You have a magic machine. It's a transporter, just like on Star Trek. Well, almost the same. You dial in the right numbers, 1-800-289-1092, and it'll transport you right here into the studio, and you can talk with William Warrick. How's that? Pretty cool, huh? Okay, now, William, this whole thing with, you know, people, sources, being afraid to speak, I mean, I run into it, as you might well imagine. You run into it.
Mm-hmm.
On the one hand, I can understand because there are people who talk a brave talk, but when it comes to walking a brave walk, that's a different thing. Whenever you stop and think that, you know, someone threatens that you're going to lose your job, you're going to lose your pension, the federal government's going to do this or do that to you, the fact is the federal government can make it hot for you, and so can private industry. They can make it hot for you, but we still do have something called the Constitution. And if you wave that in their face, it will tame almost any snake.
Yeah. You know what? Again, this gets back to the reason why I held the conference. You know, part of the title is Eyewitness 2007, You Are Not Alone. And I really thought hard about that particular phrase because I want anyone out there to know that you're not alone. There are hundreds, if not thousands, of people across the country, probably millions of people worldwide, that have had these experiences. You know, America's really behind the ball on this because other countries are a lot more open about it. You know, Belgium, Mexico, Spain, Portugal. I mean, you know, the fact that America is so far behind the ball on this is sad. We should be leading the world in this subject, in this arena, you know, and we don't. It's amazing that we have young men and women dying in Iraq right now for freedom, okay? But a couple of pilots at O'Hare Airport who obviously know the difference between flying machines and something else can't just come out and say, you know, I saw something, I don't know what it was. I mean, that is the acid test of our country. That is the acid test of our liberties. That is the acid
Here's the deal. They can. Their company
mm-hmm.
takes action against them,
yep.
they have to go after the jugular.
Yep.
They've got to go for the throat of their company in court, and they will win.
They will win. They absolutely, positively will win. So you know what, guys? All right? If you're sitting in a Chicago bar right now having a couple of brewskis, all right, do it. And if they do anything to you, you're going to be rich.
Yeah, and, you know, I know what goes through people's minds.
Yeah, it's fair.
They, you know, it's someone says, Well, look. See, I know about this because all I have to do is turn the attention towards someone and say, will you come on the air and talk with me?
Mm-hmm.
And they get all nervous and scared. A lot of people do.
Sure.
Because they're not used to having the light on them.
No, and you know, and I waited, I think, well, first of all, I waited until I knew about the Phoenix Lights because I had no other corroboration. You know, I just felt like I would be a fool, so I didn't report it. I think I waited till, what was it, late 97, even after I knew about the Phoenix Lights, it still took me a couple of months to get the gumption up to come forward and actually report my sighting to MUFON. You know, that's how afraid I was. And, of course, my father was still in prison at the time, and so I was afraid that there might be some retribution from him. So, but, you know, yeah, you're right.
Well, this happens whenever a company calls a pilot in or calls anybody in,
mm-hmm.
and they say, you know, you've had a good career here. We've treated you well. We pay you well. And we'd like to continue doing that. But if you go out talking about this, it's going to cost you. Then it makes them scared. Well, you don't have to be scared because that is illegal.
Right. It is. It's funny because I don't know if this kind of attitude was prevalent, 10, 15, 20, 25, 30 years ago. But, whether it's the consciousness of everyone sort of, you know, realizing that this isn't flying saucers and, you know, people smoking dope or tripping on acid that see these things. These are, you know, qualified people, people from all walks of life, doctors, lawyers, you know, students, pilots, military people, ex-military. I mean, just, you know, the whole cross-section
sure.
of people. And they can't all be lying. They can't all be mistaken. 900 people can't be wrong. I'm sorry.
Oh, it's way more than nine. Yeah, it's way more than 900. But that's about how many were reported. Let's go to the phone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and where are you calling from?
Hey, this is Kevin in Davenport, Iowa.
Yes, Kevin.
Hey, William, I love your passion. Really, I get so worked up about this phenomenon. You know,
you should
sort of like you do, and it's just so. You know, it's so nerve-wracking knowing the truth, and yet it's almost like we're in the twilight zone. Basically, I think this just comes down to money. You know, the people who rule this planet, power and money, and they don't want to lose what they have.
Yeah, they're afraid to lose it, absolutely. That's part of it. Yeah. Because let's think about it. You know, if... let's say over a period of the next couple of years, it becomes pretty clear that there are extraterrestrial craft in our skies. And I really believe that this is going to happen anyway, because they don't seem to care. These mass UFO sightings are increasing. They're becoming more intense, and they're becoming shorter in span between times, okay, if you really go back and study it. And it's only a matter of time before we get that prototypical, you know, landing on the White House lawn situation. And so the argument of the government has been, under national security grounds, and it goes back to the 1938 comments that I made, that there is a certain element within the government that has a very good reason to believe that they should fear change, which is the consciousness understanding of the reality of extraterrestrial intelligence. And my argument against that, or my counter-argument to that, would be, well, you know, the problem is that if we do not educate the people about these things so that they understand them without fearing them, that is when you're going to get the most amount of damage to a society. In other words, in 1938, you know, these things were portrayed as, you know, Martians from outer space and they're going to eat your brains and blah, 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 blah. I mean, that's all you saw in the B-movies. But in reality, I can't think of any case that I've investigated or read about in the past 60 years where there was an overt action by a UFO against any aircraft or civilian aircraft. A military aircraft might be different. You know, if you're trying to shoot them down, they're probably going to want to shoot you back. But certainly, you know, I think that if they were malevolent, that we would know about it in a big way. And it does not appear, at least, that the majority of the sightings or the things that we're seeing are malevolent. And so the argument that I would make is that, we should continue to disclose, the government should continue the disclosure, which I think has kind of already begun. I think it began in 1996, and some would argue before that.
But I really think that between the desire, hopefully, of those elements within the government that want to disclose this, and there are elements that do want to disclose this, and the will of the people to organize, okay, just like any other civil rights movement in history, and really push this issue to the forefront and stand behind it and stand together as one unit, so to speak, as a political force, that eventually we will overcome this situation. And it's going to require people like you getting on the phone and listening and staying up to, you know, date on what's going on, and at some point willing to participate in a political action group, you know, whether that's, you know, you spend $25 and you get a membership card and you're part of the UFO, you know, Union of America, whatever, with certain rights and duties and obligations and responsibilities, just like the AARP. I mean, the AARP and other organizations have a huge influence on our political system. And if those of us that believe like you believe, and there are millions of us, there's no question, if 70% of our country believes in UFOs and if the government's hiding them, I mean, there's a lot of $20 bills that could be going out to make this thing happen. Because money talks and you know what walks. And at the end of the day, when the American people who believe this and truly believe this in their heart, as passionate about it as I am, as seen, you know, I wouldn't believe it if I didn't see it. I don't expect everyone to believe just because I tell them that I saw something, or that 800 people tell them I saw something. And I don't really care. I want to talk to those people that have saw it because they know it. And let's get together and let's do something.
Kevin, do you have another question?
Well, not really, but the day of disclosure is really, you know, our world as we know it, you know, because I think we're dealing with a bunch of different phenomena. I mean, not just one,
yeah.
You know.
So I would agree.
We're, you know, it's pretty crazy, but keep it up. I love your passion.
I appreciate it, man, and I would agree with what you just said. You know, I think there are a lot of different phenomena going on. I don't think it's just particularly, I mean, you know, you get into energy fields and, you know, whatever, but, yeah, it could be hyperdimensional. It could be, you know, faster than like speed travel. It could be interdimensional. I mean, you can get into all kinds of different physics that could explain this, potentially explain this. And it's a huge field that should be studied.
Kevin, thank you for the call. I think it's important for people to understand that you get what you really want. Okay? In this country, I know I have people that write to me all the time. I've got one guy writes to me and tells me that democracy is the very worst form of government on the face of the planet. Interestingly, I don't talk about that on the show, but I get that in the email. But here's the point. The point is that under our form of government, whether you like it or not, you get what you demand.
You have to participate. Only 50% of registered voters actually vote, and that's because the power structures that be have convinced us that our vote doesn't count. So, you know, it...
Well, in Florida, it counts 2, 3, 4, 5 times.
Yeah, really. If you've ever heard of a book, it's called Our Madhouse by, Greg Palast, BBC guy, I believe, BBC reporter. Excellent book. Eddie, get that book. It's going to blow your mind. But at any rate, yeah, you know, if anything's going to change in this study or break this, it's going to be individual citizens coming together.
It has to be we the people.
It has to be.
Yeah.
Like every other, it has to be approached from a civil rights movement standpoint, and that's where it has failed. If Martin Luther King had been talking about this 50 years ago, we wouldn't be sitting here talking about it now.
Yeah,
you know,
you're right.
If John F. Kennedy decided that this was going to be, and some people believe that it was going to be or tried to be, that was some, there's some speculation. And just so you know, my family is Fitzgerald. Mm-hmm. My great grandmother was Rose Fitzgerald's sister. That was part of what he was going to try to do to end the Cold War, which is to release the information about ETs and UFOs. And certain presidents, like President Reagan and Clinton, have even alluded to this, too. Of course, I'm sure you've heard, remember the old speech that Reagan gave a couple of times at the UN about,
sure.
What
if we were threatened from outer space?
Right. Yeah. What if
Let's go to the phone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and where are you calling from?
Hi, Kevin and William. This is John in North Carolina.
Yes, sir.
How you doing, buddy? Yeah, I'm doing okay. I hope you guys are, too. And, Kevin, I'm sure I am glad you're doing better with your stroke. Man, that is some serious business right there.
I'll tell you, John, I thought at first it was over. Really did. I was totally conscious, although I couldn't move and walk and things like that, but I thought it was over. And I was pretty ticked about it because I was having a busy day. And but the amazing thing is that by 4 o'clock the next day, the next afternoon, the symptoms were gone. And no slurred speech, no paralysis, and eyesight was okay. And, you know, I'm, for all intents and purposes, I'm back up and running. And, you know, it's a miracle as far as I'm concerned. John, can you hang on just a moment? We have to take a break. Can you hang on through the break?
Oh, sure.
All right, folks. We'll be back in just a moment. We have to take this break. And when we come back from this break, we are into our final approach. That means we'll have about 10 minutes left when we get back, all right? All right, just in case, you might have the chance to get that call in, 1-800-289-1092. We will be back.
You took home a poisonous cottonmouth.
I missed that last part. What?
It could bite you.
I lost you.
Hello?
Besides, I'm playing with my snake.
Wish you were on a more reliable wireless network. Verizon Wireless has the fewest drop calls of any national carrier.
Good.
Come give Daddy kisses. Yeah.
Verizon Wireless, we never stop working for you.
You're just a mouse click away from a better way to rent movies. Blockbuster Total Access. Movies through the mail plus movies through the store. One low price. Get a free trial at your Blockbuster store or Blockbuster.com.
It has the clean, elegant feel of European design with a sculpted exterior of high-grade stainless steel. The very latest in programmable technology at your fingertips. There's even room for 12. But perhaps what is most extraordinary about this stylish machine is that it's free just for trying 4 boxes of Gevalia Cafe, Europe's most delectable coffee, for only $19.95. We'll even include a stainless steel travel mug. Order today and choose 4 from our exquisite collection of Gevalia coffees and teas. We'll deliver your freshly sealed selections direct to your doorstep along this sleek coffee maker and travel mug. A retail value of $115. Yours free for trying Gevalia with no further obligation. Order yours today. Gevalia Cafe. Always a pleasure.
You sure you know what you're doing?
Yeah. Where's Ralph? Come here, Ralph.
Okay, Ralph. I want you to mount the flat screen on this wall, and then I want you to put the speakers here and here, and hook it up to our computer so we can play slideshows and music. Ready, Ralph? Install!
For home theater help, you don't need a dog. You need Fire Dog. Home theater installation, PC service, wireless, and more. Fire Dog, your digital home companion. At Circuit City.
Get it all. Become a member at KevinSmithShow.com.
Call Kevin Smith at 1-800-289-1092.
We are back, and my guest this evening is William Warwick. Holding on the line with us is John. So, John, are you still with us?
Yes, I'm still here. I have two questions, Kevin, if it's okay.
Sure.
You and William.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. Well, my first question is about UFOs. You know, I'm 62 years old now, and I've known people in the past that claim to have seen UFO or anomalous occurrences, but I personally have never seen any. In case I was to see a UFO, is there a government agency that you could report this to? That's my first question. I'll take my his answer off the line if it's okay. And my second question was, has anybody heard anything out of Mars Global Surveyor? NASA has nothing on it.
Good question. Okay, we'll try to get those answered before we get to the end of our time here. And thanks for the call.
All righty.
All right. Okay, what about that, William? Is there a government agency that you would report it to?
You can report UFOs too, because UFOs don't exist according to the government.
Mm-hmm.
All right, if you're going to make a report, I would say by far Newfork, www.nuforc.org. That stands for National UFO Reporting Agency. .org, and I've dealt with Peter for a little while now, and I think without question he is the most reputable reporting agency around, and he's been around for a long time, and his database is vast. I mean, it is vast, and it's very simple, and it can be anonymous if you want it to be anonymous, and I would recommend to anyone to go to that agency and make a report immediately.
Yeah, and I think we should point out that that is not a government agency. That's
not
is
a government agency.
Private agency.
That's correct. Yes. So there is no government agency. They don't exist according to the government. So go figure. And what was the second question now?
Has anybody heard anything about the Mars Global Surveyor? Because NASA has nothing on it, and I've done a couple of shows on that. It just disappeared, and then all of a sudden, the news reports about it disappeared.
Oh, God. You know, I can't believe he brought that up. That's a little pet story that I've been working on as an investigative journalist. Apparently, there was a comet. Now, this is the Scuttlebutt. I haven't been able to really confirm this because I'm working on the UFO stuff in the conference, but the Scuttlebutt is that there was a comet called 76P that passed through the inner, very, very close to Mars a little while back, and possibly has dislodged Phobos and Deimos from its orbit and or may have destroyed the Mars Global Surveyor. And this has been a real kind of a weird development in this story, because Phobos and Deimos, for anyone who studied them, are two of the oddest objects in the solar system. In the 1940s, there were some Russian scientists who calculated that it was hollow, these two small moonlets. They're called moonlets, but what they really are is captured asteroids. And when you really go, and this is part of the conference, actually, of Phobos and Deimos, when you go and you look at the actual orbits and the orbital inclination and the orbital eccentricity, which is the amount of wobble that's in the elliptical orbit, what you find is that these two Phobos and Deimos at one time occupy what's called the upper and lower Roche limits, and those are that's as close as a planet as you can orbit before you crash into the atmosphere, and as far away from a planet as you can get in orbit before you will leave the planet's gravity well. I meant gravity well, not atmosphere. And these two, Phobos and Deimos, occupied those areas. And what's interesting about that is we developed what's called the Roche limit to be able to calculate where we should put our own satellites. So that's a very good and interesting question, and that needs to be looked into because the idea or the theory, and there's something on the web about it called Comet 76P. You know, call it conspiratorial, call it whatever you want, but the fact that, like you said, you know, the surveyor's gone and we've lost contact with it, as many, many other disproportionately high number of spacecraft that have been sent to Mars have been lost, You know, I think this whole Comet 76P thing should be looked into. And the other part of that mystery is apparently, and I'd like an astronomer, professional astronomer, if someone is listening, or even an amateur one, to try and verify this. Apparently, they can't find Phobos or Deimos now. I think the last picture that was published of Phobos and Deimos was before Comet 76P. So if someone can take a picture of Phobos and Deimos, that's recent, I'd like to see it, because that would put that whole theory to bed, although it would not necessarily put the theory to bed that possibly Comet 76B had knocked out the satellite or changed its course or somehow disturbed its orbit and caused it to, you know, lose track of the sun or whatever and die. There's any number of things that could have happened without it actually impacting it.
Mm-hmm.
If a large enough body were to trail close enough or leave debris or whatever. So that's a very interesting question from North Carolina. I like that.
Very good question. One of the really interesting things is that the news reports about it disappeared.
Yeah. And did you also hear, and I just broke today, I don't, something about the sun. I need to look into that. I have to find out. They said that there's something going on in the sun that they can't explain, because I researched that as well.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I started a thread on alienufos.com about 2012 and what's going on with us entering this. The Russians call it a energetic cloud that we're going to be in for 3,000 years, and what effect it's having on the sun, and in turn the effect that it's having on the Earth. And some of the best research that I've seen so far indicates that, for instance, back when we had those three huge hurricanes in a row with Katrina and all that a couple of years ago, that one of the correlations that was made between the increased activity of storms was that we had the largest number of solar flares during those exact time periods. And so there's a definite connection between the global warming that's happening on the Earth and the increased solar activity, along with the increased amount of CO2 that's being put into the atmosphere. And so it's kind of one of the touchy subjects that scientists don't really want to talk about, because they don't want to take the spotlight away from global warming and the reduction of CO2 that needs to happen. But the reality is that probably somewhere between 20 and 30% of all the heat that's being generated in the atmosphere that we're witnessing right now is due to the sun's activity, which in fact is probably due to this entering of the whole solar system into this galactic cloud as we move through the galaxy.
Listen, we only have a couple of minutes left, and then we have to start closing down. We have to prepare for landing and tell people, put their trays in the upright position and make sure their seat backs are up all the way and seat belts are on. We're getting ready to land. But give us your web address very quickly.
Sure. It's www, my initials. My mom always told me I'd be famous. And it's www.the, Norfolk, as in Norfolk, Virginia, and I'll spell that for you. It's NORFOLK, incident, INCIDENT.com. So it's www.thenorfolkincident.com, and you have almost all of my researches on there.
Well, it's very fascinating research, too, and I want to thank you for coming and being with us this evening.
Thank you.
And I hope you'll come back and be with us again.
I would love that. It's been a great conversation. Very, very, very enlightening, and I appreciate it, Kevin. I really do.
All right. Just hang on. I'll talk with you as soon as we get off the air. Ladies and gentlemen, tomorrow evening my guest is none other than Frances Emma Barwood, the politician you heard us talking about who took so much heat for taking seriously the Phoenix Lights and wanting to get some answers. She'll be with us tomorrow evening. You want to be here. And if no other reason, you want to be here to hear an honest politician. How about that? My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. And you can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until tomorrow night. So long, everybody. We'll be right back.